Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
People can change anything they want to. And that means everything in the world. Show me any country, and there'll be people in it. It's time to take the humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time. You know, think on that. Without people, you're nothing. Without people, you're nothing.
Stoke the fire.
Look at you.
Not just that. Every day is a Dre Day as well. It's Christmas Day, but every day is a Dre Day up here on the Queensland coast.
Hold on, I got one too.
Go on, what you got? You're on wheels, ladies and gentlemen, for the benefits of everybody listening, which is everybody, as we no longer share the video. Jesse has wheeled his desk, his podcast station, across what can only be the bedroom today, where the cat and the sheets blend and appear as one. And he is digging into his drawers. Oh, he's got exactly the same kind of sparkly, glittery Christmas hat as me. Go on, Jesse, get it on. You came prepared. I didn't tell him that that was the theme. There we are.
There you go. Now we are in it.
Well, this is what you've been waiting 4 months for. Stoke the Fire crew. That's about
how. Oh, man.
Has it maybe even been longer? Let me have a very quick look on our Instagram page and see.
If I'm going to be honest, I don't even know, dude. I've been in a time warp.
It's been over 3 months. I know that for sure because we met up in August at Wacken and Bloodstock, and we hadn't done an episode in a while since before then, even. July with Dez was the last one. So,
wow.
Pretty much 6 months, half a year.
And for those who can see, say hi to Lillian. She's on my bed here, blending in with the covers.
Yeah,
my
she's cat. Camouflage. Cataflage.
This is. Oh. Yeah, this is where she spends most of her time. So I've invaded her space. Because Purple is in the other room working on wedding invitations. Uh-huh. My void room. Uh-huh. She's in there with the printer making wedding invitations for everybody.
And she's making them herself from scratch. Of course she is, ever the artist.
Pretty much, yeah.
So how's that all going?
Pretty good, actually. Slightly stressful, but not as much as I thought it was going to be.
Is that because you're just letting her do everything? That's always the wise thing to do, I think, with wedding planning. Let the wife do everything, and then they're happy.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit of that, but it's also, you know, I got to pitch in and help. I can't let her do everything, but she does definitely has the vision and she knows what she wants. And I'm kind of just like, wow, this is really cool. I'm not disagreeing with anything. But we already like paid a lot of this stuff off way in advance. So that makes it a lot less stressful. So kind of all we've got left is to rent party equipment and figure out catering. And we're talking about getting a traveling wine bar situation to drive down because it's in such a remote location. But it's going to be really small, which is nice. Not a lot of people are really going to make it way out there. So it's going to be an intimate affair, which I'm stoked on. So yeah, things are going well, man.
Well, I very much look forward to being hopefully one of the few who is in attendance.
And, what do you mean, hopefully?
and if you still need what you asked of me the last time we spoke, then obviously send me whatever
you are,
I need and I will begin my...
You are crucial in this wedding, Mr. Stocks. Nothing has changed.
Good.
And you'll love the crew.
You don't know. You don't talk for a few months. You don't know whether you're...
Oh, no. Come on, man. Get out of here. Nothing's going to change this bond. Not even Australia.
Well, Australia has only served to strengthen everything in my life, I think. Before we
should dive into that. Yeah.
Yeah, we will. I think. We should just sort of backtrack to August and the last time we saw each other and start there, I think, if that's okay. So We met up in Wacken, I think, first. Yeah, Wacken, yep. And then Bloodstock was the order. And as you could probably tell at Wacken, because we had a nice time. We certainly had a lovely time catching up, and it was really good to see you again. But I was definitely on one, wasn't I?
You were, but you were lovely. You were pleasant. You weren't punishing or annoying. You're actually quite funny. But yeah, you were definitely on one. I like that. Definitely partying.
Yeah. And that was kind of the theme of the summer, really. I got to go to loads of really wonderful European festivals. Hellfest in France, Copenhagen, Spam in Austria, Slam Dunk, which I do every year, Download, which I did again for the first time in many years, Wacken in Germany, and I believe that was it. So it turned into a really kind of party summer, which was amazing. And I had a wonderful time and loved pretty much every second of it. But Wacken was towards the end. And I feel like at that point, as you know, as we've spoke about, as often happens, when you're in the cycle of partying and it goes on for too long, the wheels do start to come off eventually, no matter how much restraint or control you think you have. And, you know, and we'll get to where I am now in a bit and everything that you've been going through. But I just wanted to touch on this at the start because it's important for me to express that I'm very much aware you can risk sounding like a broken record, which I do, I think, sometimes on this show, where I'm like, I have a problem with alcohol. I'm going to give up drinking alcohol. I'm back to drinking loads of alcohol. What do you know? It didn't go so well there. So that's the nature of addiction. Sadly, that's what I'm kind of coming to learn about myself, is I'm very stubborn in my refusal to say goodbye to this lifestyle, because as far as I've always been concerned, it's been the source of everything that's good. And I now know that's not true. It's music, and it's the friendships that have come from music that is really the source of everything that's positive in my life. But for many, many, many years, up until this year, I was always of the opinion that, like, everything that is good in my life had been born in these fires of late nights and alcohol-fueled adventures. And that's a big part of my personality, is this outgoing kind of, like, you know, as you say, hopefully like a kind of not annoying, but definitely like a party guy. And so when I saw you at Wacken, I felt, and you didn't make me feel this way, but I felt afterwards really shit, because I really was looking forward to seeing you. And we had a much better time at Bloodstock the following week, where that was obviously a much bigger night for your band. You were headlining, and, you know, your whole team was there, and Purple was there, and I was a lot more sober that night, and I was taking photos, and I kind of made good on how I wanted Wacken to go the following week. But I definitely felt a little bit, like, ashamed, even, maybe. And again, you didn't make me feel this way at all, but I was so looking forward to seeing you for so long. It had been so long. And then I just feel like from the moment you arrived, I was already three sheets to the wind and was fucking, like, off. You know, because
I had fun, dude. Look, I get it. And you're in a festival situation. And to be fair, I didn't have much time either. So I think, if nothing else, we fast forwarded right to the funny stuff. And then we dove deep for a little while. When we found the little Lemmy trailer, we did have some depth to it. And it wasn't all, you know, just you being party guy. So there's definitely no need for shame. But I get what you're saying. You just wanted to have a little more control on your mind and your conversation, which, you know, when you're inebriated, you know, as anyone who drinks knows, you have a couple of drinks and it's kind of like that sweet spot. And once you get past that, you tend to get slurry and you kind of forget and you repeat yourself a little bit. And, you know, to me, that's kind of all chuckly. But, you know, then you get to that next stage where you can't even understand what people are saying. You didn't get to that point. So to me, it was all fun. But I do understand what you're saying. And I'm sure a lot of people listening can relate to, number one, feeling that way. And number two, waxing and waning from not drinking and drinking. That's a cycle a lot of people can relate to, including myself. So you're not alone in that.
I think what I've discovered is it's always when it's many days in succession, that is when the problems begin. Because a lot of people, you know, if you just have like a 9-to-5 regular life and you go out on a Friday and you maybe have one big night a week, that's not really a problem, is it? Because you wake up the next day, you're like, oh God, I feel a little bit rough around the edges, but you know, now I've got to tend to the kids or do the gardening or the house chores or whatever it is. So you don't immediately just, you know, think of going straight back to the pub and starting again. But when you're on tour and you exist in this world of ongoing entertainment, everybody you come into contact with, they're kind of in that Friday night spirit, no matter what day of the week it is. So if you roll into Norwich and England on a Tuesday, everyone's like, "Woohoo! It's party night because the circus has rolled into town." And if you so want it to be, every single night of the week can be your Friday or Saturday. And when you came to Wacken, it was the last day of the festival, so I'd been there three nights already. It's a free bar, which is quite rare at festivals. And I will say on record, Wacken, in terms of artist treatment, is one of the, if not the greatest festivals in the world. The way they treat their artists, they have like fleets of blacked out, like almost limo style, you know, people wagon transportation wherever you need to go on time to the minute. Catering's amazing. Full stocked bar, free all day, every day. They really treat you great over there. So shout out to Wacken. But yeah, I think when you arrived, I was already, you know, well in the midst of the session and it was kind of at the end. And this is what I'm in the process of going through working out at the moment with the AA meetings that I've been attending. If I'll skip to the end and just say that, sober a month yesterday, which I've done before.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, I've done that before many times and spoken about breaks. And I can break, I can abstain. But what I've finally accepted, Jesse, finally, is that I cannot moderate. I've tried. Lord help me. I've tried. I really wanted to hang on in there and remain a drinker. I really did. But I've now accepted that it no longer serves me in a positive way. Everything that is positive to be gleaned from alcohol and parties and social events of that kind has already been achieved and gained and experienced. And for me, there is nothing new and there is nothing positive to be gained from that world. And I came to that realization on the Flogging Molly cruise, which was very much my moment of clarity, spiritual awakening, epiphany moment, whatever you want to call it, all of those things at once, where I realized, fuck, like I'm never going to be happy as long as I'm a drinker, because that is actually the source of a lot of my existential loneliness, is this cloud of fog that takes over. Whether I show it or not, you know, people who know me well have seen that sad, dark guy. He doesn't usually surface till, say, 4 a.m. So you've probably definitely not seen him, but you know that that exists and dwells within me. And I'm sure it does to some extent within you as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I would like to say to anyone listening too, if you haven't, go back and listen to Matt's other podcast, Life in the Stocks with Steve Caballero. It's a great listen. And Matt jumps into that conversation about the Flogging Molly cruise. And there's a great conversation with Steve about God and the higher power, which I thought was incredible, really well spoken. And both you and Steve really just put it out there, and it's excellent episode. So highly recommend that. So if, you know, if you're listening to this one, go back and listen to that one after this for sure.
Yeah, that'll give you all the context you need, really. And how broken do I sound? Physically, at least, I sound about as disheveled as a man can sound, right? It's bad.
All I kept thinking was Tom Waits, and I found it quite charming, if I could be honest. But no, knowing you, I can hear the, you know, here's the thing about you though, dude, you know, what I've realized with my dealings with you is as low as you've gotten in the times that I've talked to you and I could tell you're low, you always have a glimmer of hope in there. And that's what I love about you. I know you're going to bounce back. And even when I'm concerned, you know, which the transition out of that Flogging Molly cruise, that little limbo that you were in, which, you know, you can talk about or not. Even when I was concerned, deep down, I know you're going to be okay. There's just, you know, now that you're believing in a higher power, I truly trust that God has a purpose for you. And I say that since the day I met you. You got a higher calling for sure. With someone like myself, who started out as a fan of you and listening to your podcast, the way you carry yourself, the depth of questioning you have, your curiosity for life. I always kind of lean on that when I get concerned for you, that I know you're going to be okay. You know, there's something keeping you going, man.
Well, truly it is God, and it is friends like you. And you were the first person in my life to make me feel comfortable with being open to that idea of a higher power. You know, growing up in England, We're a very cynical nation, as you know. Yeah. And if you combine an English background with a punk rock background, you're gonna, I think, inherently from a very young age, be critical of religion. And religion and faith, I think, are two very different things, and we can talk about that to some extent, I guess. But, you know, that's a whole other massive philosophical discussion. Mm. But you were definitely the first person in my life, really through this show, to show me that it's okay. It's totally, totally okay to, you know, talk openly about your belief in these things and not feel, you know, like you can maybe be aware you're going to open yourself up to ridicule from certain people. But I guess the whole point of faith is that, like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. As long as you feel that and you know it to be true, what anybody else thinks is kind of irrelevant. I'd love to get your thoughts on that because, you know, you're a singer in a very successful metal band. You're in this world where a lot of metal bands are very openly anti-religion as well as punk. And,
yeah,
you know, you must be aware that sometimes when you go out or on record on places like this and poke your head above the sand, as it were, and say, I believe in God, you know, you must know that people behind you are maybe going to be smirking or taking pot shots, but well
here's the thing about that, man. You know, I went from being the son of a preacher man, you know, an indoctrinated Christian, to someone who embraced a much more broad view of what God is, what that higher power is, the great spirit, the creator, which to me is neither masculine or feminine. I've come to the point where I think us humans have got it wrong. I don't think anyone's got it 100% right. I think the idea that there is something greater is enough to start, you know, for some people. But, you know, it's funny, you mentioned criticism. You know, the moment I say I believe in God, there's always going to be atheists that come at me and, you know, who disbelieve it. I'm like, cool. You know, I'm not evangelizing to you. I'm not trying to convert anybody at all. That's not my mission. If nothing else, I'd love for people to believe that there's something greater than them to give them hope outside of this life. But, you know, the biggest problem that I get, and you may realize this as you continue on your journey of belief in God or a higher power, it's oftentimes the people who are religious, who are indoctrinated religious, that have a bigger problem with what I say about my faith than people who don't believe. Because the people that have come at me are the hardcore Christians, the people who have this set belief that is by the letter of the book of the Bible. Those I find are the people that come at me a lot more than people who just either casually believe in God or don't even believe in God at all. So that to me kind of continues to reinforce my dislike in organized religion, because it's not the religion itself per se. It's the people who subscribe to the religion, who believe in the structure, in the, you know, the hyper organized by the letter, this is how you must live, you know, no room for breathing, no room for questioning. So through my life, my journey, I've had a bigger problem with people who are hyper religious, having a problem with them accepting the fact that I used to be an indoctrinated Christian and now I have a much broader view that really brings me, honestly, a lot more beauty, hope, and comfort to believe the way that I believe now, because it's open to interpretation. It's ever evolving. You know, the more I meet people, the more I talk to people, the more people have different religious backgrounds. I take what I think is good and I add it to what I believe. And that's beautiful. And I'm not criticizing anybody. Like, I'm not pointing the finger or forcing you to believe something. I'm just saying, hey, for me, this is what I think. It's not A, B, C, D, it's other. And I don't know, to me, that's a good way to be. I'm open for it. If in the end I'm wrong, I'll know, but I don't know. I don't think God works that way. I don't think it's as cut and dry or black and white as most organized religions say it is. I think there's a lot to be left to be interpreted. So that's kind of my whole take on it.
Yeah, Steve Caballero said something pretty similar at the very end of the live podcast that we did on the boat. He said, I've been a Christian since 2003, whenever it was. And he goes, and the only thing I've come to learn that's whack about Christianity is Christians. And
yeah,
that's true, I think, of all religion. It's human beings and their interpretation of it that gives it a bad name. It's us ultimately. I think the idea for me of God,
because we're flawed.
Yeah, perfectly imperfect, and in some cases worse. But for me, it's just the idea of love. That's what it all comes down to. All of it.
There it is. Nail on the head right there, Matt. God is love. And if you kill in the name of that, or if you, you know, tell people they're damned to a fiery pit in hell because of that, it's like, that doesn't completely make sense to me. If God is love, which I truly believe that is, you know, love is godliness. Then the other side of it, where does that come from? To me, it came from the dogmatics, the political structures and hierarchies of organized religion. So send the hate mail. It's coming.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a pretty cool community. I think one thing that is good about being at a certain level, and I think we've alluded to this before, but, you know, because we're both very individually busy people, and this podcast requires a lot emotionally for us to do it in the way that we want to, that's kind of the reason for the big breaks that we've had, and this most recent one being the longest, is like,
yeah,
we tried a few different ways to make the show not a raging success, but like some form of kind of consistent income that would warrant the time and attention that something that you do every week deserves. And so, you know, we've enjoyed the thing that I think this show has done incredibly well is it's touched people in a way that most other podcasts don't. But that number of people has been fairly condensed. And what I think is a positive of that is that there's no casual listeners to stoke the fire. So I don't think we can ever worry about hate mail unless someone was to pull a clip from it and share it in a source that, you know.
Hey, you never know.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that's how you then get notoriety and new listeners.
Yeah. But
for us, I think we always wanted it to reach more people than it did. And that's just being completely transparent. And so then when it doesn't hit that, it's not disappointment as such, because the only disappointment comes from wanting to reach people, more people with the positive message. But there just comes a time when you're like, we can't put too much more time and energy and effort into this thing, when life demands that we go out and make money elsewhere. And it really, unfortunately, for both of us, and especially for me, just comes down to needing to make an income, which is a bummer, but that is the joys of capitalist society, isn't it, Jesse?
Yeah, no, it's true. And look, you know, what I've realized too, not even just with this podcast, but with my life in general, when I write a record, it takes all of me. It really does. I feel like almost probably every record I've made with Killswitch and Times of Grace requires so much of my time, energy, and spirit that when I'm working on it, I can't handle anything else. And oftentimes I get spiraled into a pretty dark place because I'm constantly digging. You know, the lyrics I write, what I do, it's not a casual thing. It's not something that I can just sort of throw out there and like, oh yeah, let's record that song. No big deal. I'm painstakingly going over this. I'm losing sleep at night. I'm waking up in the middle of the night with stuff in my head. Like, I go through it. And I have been going through it with this album longer than any other album I've ever made, which, Matt, you can attest to. It's just been such a fucking roller coaster. And I think because of that, not only professionally, I've had to turn down a lot of things and not have time for, but personally, it's affected me. It's affected my relationships. Like, this record is taking it out of me. And that's a big part of my exhaustion. And just, I don't have the energy or wherewithal to take on anything. And I've turned down some pretty cool things because I just need to get this record done, which thankfully in the next month and a half or so it will be done. But for anyone listening there, if you've been wondering, that's a huge part of my preoccupation or occupation. I wouldn't even say preoccupation. Full occupation has been this new Killswitch record. So once that's done and dusted, then I can sort of have room for other things.
Well, when we... Excuse me. The voice is still finding its way back a month later. Jesus Christ. Do go listen to that episode Jesse mentioned and you'll hear a very different me. But since we started the show, there was a period where we spoke multiple times a day, every day. And then it kind of went down to once a day, every day. And it was every day for ages. And then it was regularly up until most recently. Regularly all the time. And you know, that isn't any reflection on the proximity of our emotional closeness. It was just, as you say, you were in this complete other realm and headspace for so long. And that was the longest we'd ever gone, just without even talking, let alone recording podcasts. So, it wasn't just that we were like, I think some people saw us hanging out at Wacken and Bloodstock and maybe hoped and expected that we'd release some stuff around that. But because that was the first time we just hung out in so long, it was nice to just be there and not worry about having to, you know, record or post stuff on social media, especially that Bloodstock night, man. I really want to talk to you about that, because what a triumphant, celebratory, beautiful moment in your life, in your career, in the band's story, your first ever headline set as a band, right? In Europe, at least.
Yeah, for me, yeah, for sure. I'm not sure about the Howard years, but it is in the UK, I believe, our first headlining festival set, for sure. Yeah, that goes down to me as, if not the favorite memory, top three memories of my entire career. The way that we are accepted and celebrated by that festival, the people there, the friends that were there, including yourself and our management, and the fact that Purple was able to stay for that. That night will ring in my memories as long as I live. It was just beautiful. And it felt validating. You know, I don't usually like to get into the whole, like, you know, things that validate me as an artist, but it felt very much like the fans were there. It was about the fans. The reason why I think we even had that opportunity was because of the fan base in England and the UK in general. And I will always remember that and hold it dear to my heart, and just grateful for the fans for allowing us to put on that set. And I've never been on stage with fire before, and that was wild. That was a lot of fire. It was amazing, man. Yeah, and I'm really happy you were able to be there to celebrate with all of us.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And I camped that night, and so after the set, got to walk around the grounds and see people who'd just seen the set and spoke to people in the campsite about the set. And it was the talk of the town. It really was. Everybody who was there absolutely was like, that's one of the best Bloodstock headline sets we've ever seen. I read, there's a really nice, I don't often read reviews of anything, but there's a really nice Metal Hammer review. I'm not sure if you guys got to see that, but there's a really nice review of the performance in Metal Hammer. And it felt like the whole community was really crowning you guys and, you know, celebrating you. As you say, they were like, we love this band. We've loved this band for X amount of years. This is their moment. Let's show up for them. And they did. And obviously, you know, you guys all felt it, and having all your team there and your loved kind of nearest and dearest must have been the sweet little icing on the cake. It was a beautiful night, even just down to the sunset as you were going on. And, you know, there's these nights where I think Alex, one of our listeners, maybe even commented on a post that I shared about this exact idea of sometimes there are just these perfect nights where even down to like the way the air feels and smells, do you know what I mean? Everything's kind of in slow motion. Certainly like that for me, because I was looking at it all through a camera lens as well. Kind of gave me a very specific voyeuristic kind of vantage point of the whole night. But it did feel like the perfect night, even down to like just the elements in the air.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I know those nights. I've had a lot of them in my life, and I'm grateful for them. But time slowing down, that's something that's just beautiful when you're able to really be in the moment. And there was times on stage even where I just was like reminding myself to be in the moment. And that's something that we've talked about before in this podcast, and something that I continue to, I don't want to say struggle with, but really try to put in the forefront of my mind on a regular basis, dealing with my mental illnesses and my anxiety, is to be present to yourself and to allow those beautiful moments soak in, you know, and to be present to people and their conversations. And, you know, I could even tie that in with alcohol. I think sometimes when you're drinking, the idea of being present once you've passed a certain point sort of leaves you, and you're not truly present to the moment, which I'm sure you can attest to as well. And that's a theme that's been coming up over and over again these past few months, is, you know, I feel there are days where I feel like it's just time is slipping away from me. It's just been crazy, especially as winter has come on up here in Woodstock, when the sun goes down at like 4:35. You know, for the first like week of winter, I was in bed around that time, just having a really hard time. But, you know, I always look back on memories like Bloodstock and Download many years ago, and times that we've hung out. You know, I think of you whenever I go to the waterfall there, Catterskill Waterfall, and just moments in time where you can look back on your life and appreciate when time seemed to slow down. And, you know, I often wonder why certain memories just stay with you forever, you know, even random ones, like the way the brain and the memory works. It's just the human mind is such a complex and beautiful thing.
Yeah, I'm really trying to nurture and nourish, rewarding is the wrong word. I'm trying to nurture and nourish pure and positive connections in this transitional period. And it's sad, and I've been this person to other people, I'm sure, but when you do consciously decide after talking about it and flirting with it and attempting it, when you really put your heels into the ground and go, I am changing who I am, the way I behave, the way I live. Obviously, when you do that, the people around you are going to change. Not everything is going to remain the same. Otherwise, you're not really doing the work and you're not really changing. And as you do evolve, the people around you either lean in and they're like, we see what you're doing. We support it. We've got your back. We encourage it. We're going to lift you up and push you forward in this quest. Or they, because maybe it triggers something in them, they question the choices that you're making and try and introduce the element of doubt, make you question your own actions because maybe they're not ready to make similar ones and they don't want to lose this connection that you have. My thing with that has always been when I've seen people get straight, I've just kind of stepped back and allowed them to go forward on that path, and I haven't necessarily been there with them and supported them. But what I've never done is questioned it or, you know, challenged it, because that's fucked. But you do notice people around you either come, you know, they're leaning into the flames and they're like, fuck yeah, this quest you're on is amazing. I see it. I back it. And there's been some wonderful people down here in Australia that have done that, and amazing friends like yourself and many, many others. But there are notable other friends in my life that have kind of just vanished. And I'm at peace with that. I'm okay with that because I get it and I don't blame them. And, you know, part of it might be like, well, I've seen him say this before and he'll be back eventually anyway. So fucking, you know, and I respect that side of the coin too. So there's definitely a period at the moment of grief going on for the old life and the old friendship circles. But I think that idea, the realization for me happened on the cruise, Vlogging Molly Cruise 2023, day one. I won't talk about the conversation that I had because it's private, but I shared it with you, that really intense, tragic, kind of, you know, profound conversation that brought up, brought up all of these feelings inside me. And that was kind of when then I just, and I've been reading this Nick Cave book, Faith, Hope, and Carnage, I think it's called. It's all like just a series of interviews, and he talked a lot in it about faith and about God. And so through doing this show with you, my mind had opened to it more, and reading this book with Nick Cave talking about it a lot. And obviously he lost two of his sons in quite a short time period. So he was going through this really intense grief. And you know, my mum, as I've spoken about on this show before, lost my sister whilst giving birth to her. And so I think grief and the theme of grief in your life, it opens your mind up to life. Right? Because you feel most alive when you're confronted with death by its very nature. I think that's the realization that you come to there, is like, wow, life is fragile. It's precious. It's fucking transient. So what's next? And you start thinking about these things. And because I've been confronted with death night one on the boat, and there'd been the thing that had happened on the previous cruise that you were on, which I was saying to you, I think that definitely left a feeling as well in the air and on the ship with the crew. And I started thinking like, fuck, who am I really deep down? Who am I? Who do I want to be? What am I here to do? What am I here for? Am I living the life I want to lead? And I don't mean in terms of ambition or success, as you know, that I'm not about that. But I do want to, as I know you do, leave the world a better place. You know, when we go on to wherever we go, I just want to know that the people who came into contact with me, you know, had their lives changed for the better, not the worse. And that's really as simple as it is. And I figured out in all of this revelation that alcohol does not, alcohol's stopping me from being my best, the best version of myself, as cheesy as that sounds. It is, it's, you know, I know I can be awesome on booze, and I have been in the past, awesome and fun on booze, but I know I can also be an asshole. And I know that I've never done anything that I regret or that I'm ashamed of or I'm embarrassed by when I'm sober and I'm present, ever. I know I'm a good dude when I've not had a drink. I just know that. I'm not someone who makes poor life choices when he's sober. I'm just not. I'm a really stand-up, decent dude when I've not had a drink. When I've had a drink, I don't really give a fuck. And that's why I drink, is to not feel the fucking pain that I'm always in.
Yeah.
And a therapist would have a field day with why all of that's there. But that's why I drink, is to forget and escape and numb. And I realized all of this on the boat, finally, you know, after 25 years of hard living. I was like, this is why I do it. I'm an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. I've always thought that I'm not, because I can stop at any time. But it's the way that I drink and my relationship with alcohol and why I drink that makes me an alcoholic. So I kind of accepted that, as I spoke about with you on the phone. It was the most beautiful moment of my life. Complete surrender. Just went into the chapel on the boat, fell to my knees, flood to tears, and was just like, I know you're real. I know that whatever you are, you're out there. And I can't get straight without your help. I know that I can't. So I'm humbling myself and I'm saying that I'm powerless. And I need you. If you are indeed an entity of the profound power that I believe you are, can you come to my side and show me the way here and now? And sure enough, every exchange that I had on that boat from then on in was a reminder of life and the potential of life without this bullshit. But like a true addict, I was like, well, if this is my last time, then I'm not going down without
a
fight.
Let's have at it.
So I literally just raged for the whole time. And that's why my voice is gone and I sound completely decrepit in the live podcast that I did on the last day with Steve Caballero. But in the lead up to that chat with him, I was with this dude. There's just a tray of cocaine. And we just worked our way through all of it. And I was like, cool, that's it now. I've gone as far as I can ever go, many times over. And now this is the final fucking nail in this thing, and I'm done forever. And it's been an absolute blast, but now it's come to an end. And then I got a bit of rest, went to do the thing with Steve, and that was my day one. That's where I chose day one of my sobriety to be, was on the final day of the cruise, because I love a challenge. And then the moment you referred to, the limbo moment earlier, was when I was stranded in Miami waiting for my visa to come through. Didn't know if I was going to make it to Australia. Didn't even have shoes because I'd left them on the boat. It was just a fucking mess of a man walking around Miami in the rain, calling Jesse, just, I don't know what I'm going to do. And like the legend that he is, he just, you know, was there to listen and offer some gentle guidance. And, you know, you taught me patience many years ago when we first became friends. And you kind of just were there for me along with two other people in that real hour of need. And I just sort of held on to my hope. And eventually made it out to Australia. And then when I landed in Australia, I joined this traveling festival called Lagerfest, where all these bands are drinking beer out of their shoe. And I was
ironic.
Like, what a great place to be sober. But those guys were beautiful and amazing and supportive. And they were like, we totally get it. We see you. We have your back. And every interaction I've had with friends of old, new friends, been going to AA, that's been its whole other thing. And I'll wrap up this rant in a minute, but I just wanted to say that the universe has had my back since that realization. The writing has been on the wall in every interaction that I've had. And I really think it is as simple as just being open to the idea. And if you believe and you act as if you believe and you engage with the world around you as if these things are real and they mean something, then you will see the results time and time and time and time again. And that idea of self-manifestation and... it's just been a really beautiful month since admitting it began with that moment of surrender and admittance. But since that moment, everything has been better and easier, everything. And it just comes down to the way I think about myself and feel about myself and about, you know, what's important in the world around me. And it's been life-changing and so wonderful.
Beautiful. I love it. And taking control back, you know, I think that's the one thing that addiction can do, is you lose control of who you are. And there's a quote by Steve-O. I heard a soundbite rather, where he's talking about alcohol, and he says, "It's not the alcohol; it's the person. It's what's inside you, the demons that you're dealing with, or the person that you are, the trauma that you have. Alcohol is just numbing. It's just sort of like the thing that you do. But the real work begins when you remove alcohol or you remove the addictions, and then you're just left with your feelings. That's why a lot of people, when they go sober, those emotions flood up, and sobriety becomes the new addiction. It's you get sort of high on being sober, but then there's that crash of like really having to sit with yourself. And, you know, I could see why people, you know, are drawn to places like AA, because it's as we spoke earlier about this, like it's group therapy. It really is. You feel less alone. You get different perspectives. People are telling you what they went through. And oftentimes, because I've been to these meetings too, you know, as someone who was supporting somebody going through AA, some of the stories you hear are so wild that you kind of look at your own life and go, well, you know, thank God I got out. Thank God my life wasn't that crazy. I didn't do what that guy did or that girl did. So that whole community, that whole idea of recovery, and I know, you know, speaking to Randy from Lamb of God, for example, about it, it's just a great support system, and it helps you navigate. Sobriety isn't, you know, not a lot of people talk about it in the mainstream. It's not something that's very popular. A lot of people, like you say, shy away from it. Look, you're going sober. Do you? Good for you. I'll be at the pub having drinks, continuing my life. Like, good luck to you. So a lot of people don't talk about that process of how difficult, how liberating and beautiful for sure, but how difficult navigating your emotions and your brain. And when you get rid of this thing that's numbing certain parts of your brain, those certain parts of your brain start to light up and you become very emotional and kind of unstable for a while. And that's difficult waters to navigate, but it's all part of the process. And it's something that I've felt too when I go sober for like a month, like this coming January, going to have a sober January. I think it's important to do that. If you're not going to go sober, you need to take breaks to sort of know who you are without this thing that you're constantly ingesting that manipulates your brainwaves. It manipulates everything about you. And I don't think people realize even if you're just a casual everyday drinker, it still affects you on a crazy level. That is something that I feel like more people need to be aware of.
I actually love sobriety, as well as you know. I've never had a break and like been depressed. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's the other thing with me, as you've seen time and time again. Every time I take a break, I'm like, all this energy's coming out. I look and feel healthy.
Yeah, you get like, worked on. You go for long walks. Yeah, you're like in your prime, dude.
I love
sure.
it. But then what happens every single time is like, oh, but I do like drinking. And I've had this time off to think about it. And now if I go back, I know I can just have a couple and I can, you know, treat it differently and have a new relationship. And I might do for like a night or two. And then, boom, it's just straight back into the belly of the beast. And it's denial. It's denial and it's ignorance on my part that I think I can beat it. I can cheat it. You know, and I'm always like, I'm not going to admit that I'm powerless. Like the first step, fuck that. I'm all the power. Like all the power is me. I make the decisions. I make the choices. I'm driving the seat. I am when I'm sober. But right. when I get out of my mind, I'm not behind the wheel all the time. And that's kind of why I like it, because I'm like, hey, freedom, it's liberating. But it's really not. Anyway, I'm not here to like preach about the awesomeness of sobriety. What I am here to share is that I feel amazing.
It's beautiful. So I have a question for you, and maybe the people want to know if they haven't been reading on your socials. Why Australia? What brought you to Australia? And now that you've been there, how do you feel about Australia? Because when we spoke, I had said to you, man, I have a feeling you're going to get there and it's going to be a game changer for you. Because I've just really enjoyed my time in Australia, the people, the culture. And now you're there at the perfect time of year, the sunshine. It's a completely different world. So why Australia? And now that you've been there, how is it treating you? And what's in the, you know, in the front window of your car as you're driving? Like, what are you driving towards for your future, in the foreseeable future, I should say?
So the reason I came here, backtrack, the reason I came is I was offered a very short tour with a band called Lagerstein on their traveling festival, Lagerfest. They play like pirate music, lovely dudes, drink shoeies, good time guys. I'd met them a bunch of years ago. And they were like, do you want to come down and DJ and host these shows? And I was like, hell yeah. How many? When is it? And it turned out it was like the day after the Flogging Molly cruise was the first date. And I was like, well, I'd love to, but there's no way I'm going to make it from a boat in Miami to, I think, Christchurch in New Zealand was the first show. So I can't make the first two dates, but if I miss out the New Zealand section of the tour, I can join in Australia and do the rest. I'm in. So they're like, we'll sort out your flights and your fee and your visa. And I'm like, well, fucking hell, all right. If I'm coming all that way, I'm not just going to stay for 5 days and do this tour and then fly home. What's the longest I can stay? And they were like, well, 3 months on like an entertainment work visa. So I just said, well, if it's okay with you guys, put me down for that. And I'll just hang out for 3 months. I'll stay in hostels, stay with friends, pick up DJ gigs, you know, record podcasts, do what I do in England, but do it down there where the weather's nice and the people are nicer, to be honest. And so that was the, you know, plan. And then, you know, the Flogging Molly cruise thing happened, because initially I was just going to come down here and no doubt rage for 3 months. And that option would be here in abundance if I wanted it. But I think, going back to the idea of a plan, a design, and a higher power guiding you, I think God stepped in on that boat and was like, dude, if you go to Australia like this, you're going to die. You're probably not going to make it through summer. You know, you've been going pretty hard for a while now. You've had a few lucky escapes, and maybe that luck has finally come to an end and it's time to turn your life around. And what better place to do it than this beautiful ancient land, surrounded by a supportive network of caring friends, and opportunity, and a sense of self-worth within yourself, which the industry that I work in, as we've spoken about, I speak to you privately about this a lot. I think we've spoken about it on the show a couple of times before, but the UK music industry has never had my back. That's not me getting out the world's smallest violin and going, boo-hoo, isn't my life tough? But it is a fact that nobody in my industry, in my country, has my back. I don't have peers in the DJing or journalist or presenter areas. Everybody talks shit about me, whether that's because of jealousy or just disdain, I don't know. But my only friends in the music industry are American and Australian musicians, generally, and then touring crews. People, and then like people who work in the live event and kind of entertainment sector. So venue owners and booking agents and things like this. But if we're talking like band managers, publicists, other journalists, presenters, DJs, etc., I don't feel like I'm a part of that. And I've realized whilst being down here, fuck, a lot of my misery and my unhappiness is from being in this quote unquote community that is actually just this toxic, disgusting environment where everybody is out to fucking fuck over the other person at any expense, and there's no support and there's no care. And Ian wrote about it in his book, Ian Winwood, who we had on the show, but he wrote about the industry in a very complimentary way. No disrespect, Ian. It's an amazing book, but the way he writes about Kerrang! Magazine as being this beautiful family, it ain't. At least that's not my experience. And I feel like he gives the industry an easy ride because he wants to continue to work in it. And I understand that. And maybe that's why I have enemies, is because I, you know, speak my mind and people don't like that. But that's kind of why I'm down here, is I'm figuring out who I want to be, but also what I want to do, because the industry that I work in is the source of a lot of my unhappiness. It's also the source of some great friendships and experiences. But is it worth it to keep going to these suicidal, alcoholic depths of despair? Is it worth it to still get to go to festivals and photograph bands that I like? And, you know, is it worth it? What's the trade-off? So that's the rawness that I'm sitting in at the moment, as well as doing all the sobriety work. But it's all one and the same, really, is who am I without that stuff? For me, it's the interviewing. This is where I thrive and excel. This is my calling. This is my purpose. This is my power. This is everything that is joyful in my life, comes from these conversations that we have on this show and the conversations that I have on Life in the Stocks. But I've never been able to monetize it. So maybe I look to try and do something similar in an area that pays. And again, I've spoken to you and on this show about it, whether that's lecturing, whether that's mentoring. What do I do next, dude? I don't know. But I'm not afraid of the future. I'm not worried. You know, I'm taking my time. I really want to do more monster truck shows. When I go back to the UK after here, I go straight into 2 months of monster truck shows all around the UK and Europe. And that's going to be teaching European hosts how to do the show and kind of doing more of a producer behind the scenes role, which really excites me, because I think the other thing, dude, is like, I no longer have the drive that I used to about being in the spotlight or, you know, like the host. So maybe I can just use all the skills that I've got to train other people who want it more and see them flower and grow. Like, I want to do stuff that has purpose and meaning and that there's real connection behind it.
So love that, man.
That's where I'm at.
I got to say, and anyone listening here,
real talk. You know,
I've said it before, but you know, anyone listening here, if you know somebody that's, you know, in the industry that has a job for Matt doing some kind of an interview radio thing, please let them know, because that is what you are great at. That's where you shine. Every interview I listen to, I listened to the Billy Bob Thornton one recently as well. I mean, you have it. You have it. If there's a thing that's it, that what you want to call it, journalism, which I don't even think you're limited to that title. You just have a natural curiosity for humans and you ask the right questions. You do enough research. You keep it engaging and interesting. I listen to a lot of podcasts. There's very few people off the top of my head. Rich Roll would be one of them that engages people the way that you do. And that's definitely a gift. So I hope more than anything that you're able to get that and monetize that. But well, I might just keep
doing that for fun, dude. Like that's kind of where I'm at with Stoke the Fire in Life and the stocks now anyway, is I haven't looked at the listening figures in years. I don't care. I don't really pitch to PRs anymore for guests because I can't be asked to deal with them. I'll just message people direct. If they're in, they're in. If they're not, they're not. But I really just do both podcasts for the love now, and that's it. And then it's pure and it's awesome. But what I need to do outside of them, because I'll continue to do them, is figure out a way to make money. But go on. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, but I get the whole behind the scenes thing, you know, being a vocalist, some call it a front man, but you know, in reality, Adam D to me is very equally much the front man. So let's just say lead vocalist for Killswitch Engage. I crave the behind the scenes as well. And I've actually talked to my managers and put myself out there, and I'll say it now if you're listening. I want to start producing vocalists. I want to help with people writing lyrics. I think my gift lies within the written word and the spoken word. And if I can find a way to monetize that aside from being, you know, the guy on stage, I love that idea too. I just think once you've had a lot of it and you've pursued it and you've been after it for so long, the idea of stepping back from that is appealing. But I also, you know, in the same breath, know that I truly do love performance. I love touring. I love it. I still love it at my age.
Of course you want to be on stage, and of course you want to have those moments of interaction with an audience, because, you know, you're an amazing figure in that community that you exist in, dude. And you obviously got to experience that on your own cruise that you went on before me. Like, we've spoken about my Flogging Molly cruise experience, but you were obviously on the Lamb of God cruise as a DJ. Ironically, you weren't there as Jesse from, well, you were there as Jesse from Killswitch, but you weren't in Killswitch. But tell me about the interactions that you had on that boat and the ways in which that maybe reinforced how, you know, valuable your role is to you and how special and meaningful the relationship with the community around you and the audience that you've cultivated is.
The Lamb of God cruise was one of my favorite experiences I've ever had. As the British would say, a punter, just going there to like enjoy my friends and bands I haven't seen in years. And I did go into 2 mosh pits. I definitely went in and threw down pretty hard. Yeah, I did. I still got it. I threw down with the kids and had just a really good time. You know, the first day was a lot of, ooh, you're Jesse Leach from Killswitch Engage, photo, autograph, whatever. But after that first day, which you can attest to this, people kind of ease into that cruise thing and you kind of just become friends. And I started to become, you know, Jesse instead of just Jesse from Killswitch. And people weren't taking the pictures. They wanted to buy me a beer or, you know, hang out and have a conversation about life. And I did that. I made myself available. Every night I would go out and just wander around and watch bands and hang out and talk to people. And I had such joy in my heart. It was a joyful experience. I got treated really well by the Lamb of God camp. They couldn't have put me in a better place, you know, just as far as where I was staying, how I was treated. And then, you know, the tragedy that, you know, if you don't know, there was a young man who on that second to last night jumped off and took his own life. And that really, the vibe was really heavy that morning, but it turned into, and I feel like this is where the community aspect does come in when you're dealing with death. The community really rose to the occasion, and that last day was healing. It was magical. It was beautiful. I did an acoustic set with Mark Morton from Lamb of God, and Matt Jimmy James, I think is his name, who's a brilliant singer. And we did a bunch of songs, and then I stood up and sort of just, I don't know, the spirit took me, and I just talked about being there for people and being able to speak out when things are hard and how we need to come together and heal as a community. And that last day was just something else, man. And I think that anyone who was on that cruise will never forget the vibe of that boat that day. Everywhere you went, you saw people either with tears in their eyes or arm in arm hugging people, friends just being together, and, you know, not jovial and celebratory, but like enjoying life together and realizing that life is precious. So I walked away from that cruise, and I would definitely do it again in a heartbeat. Lamb of God's doing it again next year. So if, you know, I think it might be sold out, but what an experience. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did. And to be on a boat in the middle of the Caribbean with a bunch of like-minded people. I mean, when I was younger, you told me I would be doing that. I would be like, no way. I just couldn't believe that metal music brought us all out to the middle of the Caribbean on a boat and just having fun and meeting new people and making new friends. So it was incredible.
Yeah. And I think that feeling from your last day, because it was, you know, the way the cruises work is you get everybody off the boat and then everybody gets on and the next cruise starts up. And mine was 2 days after yours finished. So I think a lot of that remnant was still on the boat in the air, certainly in the hearts of the crew who'd worked it. And I said it in the introduction of the Cab podcast that I did, but on those cruise ships, specifically, I think the punk and the metal ones where the community is already there, everything comes to the forefront in such a powerful kind of like 4K, whatever it's called, high definition presentation of life, the ups, the downs, the joy, the struggle, the heartache, the pain. You know, you really come to know these people and it does become like a family. You know, I mean, it's only 5 days, but you know, you're at sea. It's like a voyage. You go on this quest, depending on how romantic or, you know, how much of an overthinker you want to be. But I do feel like when you go, it's not just like going to a festival where they do have their own energy balls and kind of unique experiences. I've been to a million festivals. I've never experienced anything like what I experience on the Flogging Molly cruise every year, where you're just like, oh my God, like, again, not to be a complete God botherer. But you're like, God is everywhere right now, in every conversation, in every look, in every glance. Like, it's just fucking right there all around you. And that's what gave me that strength on that boat to just be like, I want to show up for myself, but I also want to show up for my community, for these people who are around me, because they deserve better. And I'm really pleased that you had that exact same experience on your one as well, as an artist. And as you say, you're someone who's a bit more like, oh man, am I going to get punished the whole time? Once everybody's got that one photo, then, as you say, you're just your dinner mates. You're sitting across the table from the guy. He's like, oh, there's Jesse again. Hey, dude, you're right. See you at the bar later. It's immediate. The connection is immediate and it's real and it's awesome. And shout out to Sixth Man as well. They're just the greatest team of events organizers. And my dream, actually, dude, would be this. Here's kind of where my head's at the moment. My dream year would look like this. Although I've just bagged on DJing. I would love to do the monster truck stuff throughout kind of spring and autumn, intermixed with some actual more steady work for the Sixth Man cruises, hosting activities and events on the boats and you know, doing live interviews and kind of just coordinating the programs and the entertainment and the music on all their different experiences, and then doing the odd wedding DJ gig here or there. That's, you know, because wedding DJ gigs are amazing because everybody's there to celebrate love, and they're usually,
yeah, that's different.
They're at nice venues, and you meet with the couple and you kind of curate the music they want to hear. And then even if their guests are bothering you on the night, you say kind of like, well, you know, it's their wedding and we've worked out the music with them. So if you want what you want, you get married, Jaime, and there we are. that would be my dream existence. I think the combination of all of those things, then doing my podcast just for fun, that would allow me to exist in the world that I want to, of entertainment and music, and still have performative stuff going on, and then the behind the scenes stuff going on, connection, real connection everywhere. But the key thing, not have to deal with any of the politics or the bullshit that comes with the music industry back home. I would be, as my great friend Whitfield Crane says, in it, but not of it.
Love that. It's funny, man. As I was listening to you, but it was a mantra going through my head, and it was the word connection, and you said it immediately when it popped into my brain. And I think to me, that's sort of the bow I think we can put on this episode, is what you found on the Flogging Molly cruise, what I witnessed on the Lamb of God cruise, what you see when you're in the right time, at the right place, with the right band or the right group of people, is that connectivity. And that's something that keeps me going. It's something that I seek out. It's like once you have that special moment where you're just there for this song that's being played and everyone around you is just in it, that feeling that you just can't describe, you can't really put words to it, because I do believe that God is in those moments when you have those connective moments with a large group of people that may have been strangers before that moment, but after that moment, there's something that happens. It's something I would say, even on a chemical level or a cellular level, that just draws you in and pulls you to realize that that's what it's all about, isn't it? That's why we're here. People always wonder, you know, this existentialism. I'm 100% one of those people. I think on existential terms on a regular basis. Why are we here? What is the purpose? Why am I going through this? And the end of every single depression or bout that I have dealt with is connectivity. You can't and you shouldn't be alone in this world. It's good to be reflective and to have those moments alone, but we need each other. People need people. That's just the bottom line. That's how we experience the beauty of God, if you will, is through each other. That's it. That's the bottom line. We need each other. We need to be connected to one another. And that's why we even started this podcast, and we've talked about it since day one. And that's why I continue to do Kill Switch, is because we have so much more in common as humans, as wars rage all around us, as you know, corporate greed makes people homeless and allows them to die in the streets due to lack of medical attention. The list goes on and on of all these horrible things that happen all around us. But if people just realized how much we had in common, there wouldn't be any of this stuff. And if you truly do believe that God is love, love is the only thing, that will be able to save us from the darkness that's all around us. And love is the one thing that continues to drive people like you and myself to continue to do what we do, because we want that connectivity. We have to have that connectivity. That is life. That is the stuff of life. Without it, it's hopelessness. You're lost. You're out there in the void. And what do you do? Like, I've never been able to understand that. Like, without a faith in something greater than you, without a belief in love, which is God, you've got nothing. That's it.
That's what you do so well, my friend. You tie the ribbon and the bow around the whole idea with such beautiful poetry. And that really is your calling. And I hope as your career, you know, continues to flower and flourish, you will explore these other avenues to the gift that you have to share, because you're an amazing vocalist. You're an amazing lyricist, but as I've come to know through our friendship and through sitting in these spaces with you. You are, I don't even know, there's a spiritual quality to everything that you do. And when you just talk like that and share your truth and your observations, it really does connect with people in ways that I think fans of your music would agree is even more powerful than the songs that you create. You're a really special, unique, incredible individual. I'm so grateful to know you and call you my friend. And I've really missed these dudes. And I really, when we don't talk regularly, I miss our conversations. And I know you've been busy and I know you've had your own stuff going on, but can we both make more of a pact to be more regular with our communicado? And I want to ask you, although that was an absolutely beautiful note to end on, before letting you go, I know you've been shifting through the fog as well. Are you now in a place where you feel like you know what needs to be done, have done what needs to be done? Do you see the way forward? Do you feel positive and hopeful and optimistic in your heart? Are you in a good place? Share with me the Jesse Leach journey of the last few months, if you wouldn't mind, before I do let you saunter off into the night.
I think that, I've definitely been through it. But yeah, as we sit here now, I've never lost hope. I never lose hope. I always know things will get better. That's ingrained into me. As much as I poo-poo on organized religion, you know, my father being a minister and a man that I admire very much to this day, a lot of my, and my mother, a lot of my good qualities come from those two. And they've taught me a lot about their faith in God, and they definitely walk the walk. They don't just talk the talk. So I have to give them the highest respects for raising me the way that they did. But that being said, I've got my flaws. I've got my mental illnesses. I've got my trials. I'm still a work in progress. I've got my bad days. I've had moments where I've been an asshole. Of course I see there's no other way but forward. I think sometimes you have to dip back into the past a little bit to sort of take stock of what you've been through and reexamine your scars, but there's no other way but forward. And I know that I'm destined for some kind of greatness through the connectivity and through the gifts that I've been given, whether that be spiritual or musical or lyrical. I have no choice. This is it. It's all or nothing. And I won't stop doing what I'm doing and trying to achieve things and pursue things in the name of love until I die. It's my calling. I know it is. I don't know what exactly it is. I'd love to do something outside of music as well. I can't help it. I'm a hopeless optimistic, even when things are dark and I really beat on myself, which I have a tendency to do if something goes wrong or if I, misstep or treat somebody well. I beat myself up harder than they could ever. And that's definitely one of my flaws, but I'm a hopeless optimistic. And I know that there are greater things in store for both you and I. And as dark as this world gets, I truly believe in the end, good will prevail, love will prevail, and God will show us why we've been through everything we've been through. There's always a light at the end of the tunnel.
I really hope through these conversations we can continue to nurture our own little community around this podcast as well. What I would love to do, if you're all right with it, I never wanted to do this in the past because I didn't want to take away any of the listening figures from Stoke the Fire, but now we can both agree we don't care. Can I put this out on Life in the Stocks and Stoke the Fire so I can hit up all of my audience on there as well and hopefully get some of the people that, because what's been interesting with the last few months is so many people have been like, when's the next Stoke the Fire episode coming? And so that audience I know is there, but then with my show, over 300 odd episodes, because there's been so many conversations, I feel like it's been hard trying to get some of the people from over there over here, just because it's like, is there enough time in the day? But I'd really like to share this on both platforms and hopefully encourage people, to intertwine between the two and just kind of grow what we have, because I've felt it. And I know you have with the emails we've received, and we haven't been great as of late with keeping up with everything, but it is hyper real. The appreciation that we have for everybody who does connect with this show and with us and the conversations that we have. And it's definitely important for me. I hope it is for you to continue to grow that in this lane as well. So I'll do that if you're happy for me to do that. Share it on both. And then when I'm home in a few weeks, maybe 6 weeks, I think it is, I go back to the UK. Let's try and start, and hopefully around that time you'll have finished completely, finally, with the album.
Oh, I will.
And if there is a gap in our schedules, you know, a week here, a day here, wherever it is, hopefully we can start booking in some new conversations, maybe get some listeners back on and start stoking the flames, you know, with at least some semi-regularity once again, because I feel like it's too much of a special group that we've already cultivated around this podcast to let, you know, disappear into the night. So let's...
I agree.
Let's endeavor to throw some more logs on the fire in the new year and get this show kind of, you know, back up to at least half speed.
Yeah, and it's good therapy too for both of us. And I think it just exercises not only our friendship, but our mutual love of connectivity with people. So yeah, the show must go on, I guess you should say.
The show must go on. Did you like that You're My Best Friend Queen song that I put over the picture?
Oh yeah, I loved it. Beautiful stuff.
You really are, dude. You've always been, and I know that you don't always do well when you are in your hole with reaching out and asking, not for help, but just for, you know, a friend to be there and maybe, you know, just listen to thoughts you have going on. But I think the nature, I've been thinking about this a lot, along with everything else, the nature of any good friendship, like a relationship, like a partnership, is based on equality. And you have always, always been there for me. And I just hope that you know, if you do ever decide to, you know, reach out, that I am always here for you. And I hope that you know that. And please,
I do know that.
If you ever need a friend, do not be shy and lean on me as well, because you're always there for me, man. You're always there for me. And I owe you so much. And I love you so much. And yeah, very lucky to have you.
It's reciprocal, brother. There's no owing. You don't owe me anything. But yeah, I appreciate that. I'm definitely not the best when it comes to reaching out. I fight my own battles alone to a flaw. And Jeff, as you know, Jeff, one of my best friends as well, it checks on me every once in a while, just like you do. So you and Jeff are my guys, man. And I appreciate that. But yeah, more of this soon. But in the meantime, I've got to get dinner. I haven't had dinner yet. And the Australian sun, I'm sure, is calling you as well. And I just want to thank everybody for their understanding, for their patience. And even if you didn't have patience, it is what it is. This podcast is what it is. And I love that it's a passion project. It's not based on figures or money or any of that. And we're still here. We're still kicking. And it's a beautiful thing, man. It's going to continue on.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.